You're listening to the Naked Genetics podcast with me, Kat Arney. Still to come, we'll be learning about a legless gene of the month. But first, humans aren't the only animals to be getting their genomes analysed. Our four-legged friends have been getting in on the act too, as I found out when I spoke to Jeff Schoenbeck from the Roslin Institute in Edinburgh.
The differences between pugs and Great Danes and these dogs of very disparate shapes. What's remarkable is that it seems like in dogs, these things that are driving shape differences can be held in a couple hands. You know, so this is quite a striking difference to other species. And you know, I think about human stature and the genetics of something like that in humans, which we know from studies, there's hundreds of variants that seem to be important or playing into this determining stature. And in dogs, what we have are, at the moment, I mean, it depends on the study and how it's designed, but you know, somewhere in the tens of variants that could be playing into this. And that's a remarkable difference. But bear in mind, you know, a lot of these variants had to be recognized by breeders, so in the litter. And so we think, the difference between dogs and humans or other species is that the variants in particular that are affecting morphology probably have larger effects than what would typically be found in a population of humans.
Different dog breeds have been very highly selected for. You know, they want the long ears of a basset. They want the kind of the luxurious hair of a poodle. How do you start pinning down some of these genetic differences that lead to these really quite disparate traits?
So we begin by comparing the skulls, the shapes and sizes of skulls across animals. Our study design is based on patients that come in through the referral hospital, many of them coming through the Royal Dick School of Veterinary Studies. You know, these patients are coming because there's a diagnostic purpose for them to have a CT scan. But we can take that information when a dog gets a head scan, we can use it to reconstruct the head, and we can derive size and shape from those animals. And so we can feed this information into our genome-wide association studies, which, you know, for all intents and purposes, tell us what area of the dog genome and what piece of DNA is carrying a particular genetic change and is driving a pug to have a shorter snout. That's the first part. So we want to find a signal that's driving a particular shape-related event, and we want to identify what chromosome and what region of the chromosome that change is located on. And then we want to look across our data and try to, by comparing dogs of similar shapes to those that lack that shape, and identify what is the minimal region where this mutation or this genetic change could fall in. Is it 100,000 positions? Is it 90,000? And then once we have an interval defined, then we leverage these whole genome sequencing technologies that have come on board in recent years, and we sift through genotypes and genetic variants, and we try to infer what is the best candidate there that could be causing this morphological change. Ultimately, we want to understand what is the change at the DNA level that's driving the trait. And, you know, in the future, we'd like to characterize the biology behind this. But it's still a bit of early days for us. We're still trying to define what are the places in the dog genome that drive size and head shape.
More broadly, looking at other studies that have been done, what sort of genes have been identified that give some of the varieties to dogs that we see?
Yeah, so, you know, I think among the morphology studies, you know, size is where the most data exists. And we see genes that make sense, things that affect insulin signaling, insulin growth factor 1, which we know in a myriad of species can affect overall animal size. Growth hormone receptor, again, this is a gene who captures signaling molecules and signals downstream to modulate growth. So these are fantastic. They make sense in terms of why they've been selected by breeders to modulate animal size. And then we have, you know, from the skull side of things, it's still pretty wide open. And this is, you know, again, the interest of my lab is to put this issue to rest, so to speak. We know, we can infer that BMP signaling is probably involved. BMP standing for bone morphogenetic protein. So that makes sense. There's still a lot to be done.
One of my favourite traits in dogs is the little stumpy ones, things like corgis and dachshunds and bassets. Is there a similarity between these kind of stumpy dogs in terms of their genetics?
Absolutely, and this is fantastic work. Heidi Parker in Elaine Nostrander's lab wondered the same exact thing. What is driving dogs to have smaller legs? And the technical term for this is asymmetric chondrodysplasia.
Acute stumpiness.
Yeah, exactly. So she compared all the belly scraping dogs to those that stand high off the ground and looked for genetic differences between the dogs with the short legs and the dogs with long legs. And she found this beautiful signal on chromosome 18. You used other tools to see, well, was there breeder-mediated selection in this area on chromosome 18? And indeed there was. And then through using sequencing and mapping technologies, she was able to find a region. And it turns out it's an additional copy of FGF4.
What does FGF4 do, and how did an extra copy of it get into these short dogs?
So FGF4, fibroblast growth factor, and FGF, there's a large family of FGFs, and they're involved in a host of different biological processes, but they have a very prominent role in development. And FGF4 in particular is a gene that's required for normal limb growth. In many species, this has been demonstrated. And so what we think occurred in dogs, and this is due to the structure of this additional FGF gene that was identified, and what we infer is that it's in fact a copy of RNA.
The message of the gene.
The message of the gene had been reverse transcribed back to DNA, and that DNA got inserted back into the genome. So the dogs wound up with an extra copy of FGF4, and somehow this extra copy, well, the overexpression of this gene is probably perturbing limb development, so it's restricting limb growth.
And then presumably some owner of that dog went, wow, that's cute, let's make more of those.
Absolutely. And so, here's, getting back to this idea of form and function, well, here it's man saying, well, these dogs have a form that can, suit very well in the function of going into holes of badgers or rabbits and chasing out prey or unwanted pests in the farmland. And so many of these dogs that have this FGF retrogene are dogs that are used for hunting in burrows. And then the other large body of dogs that have this are cattle herders. So the idea being that they're so low to the ground, if a cow kicks, it'll swoop up above the head and they'll miss it won't connect with their head.
That was Jeff Schoenbeck from the Roslin Institute.